Good afternoon, and welcome to the 2014 Retail Marketing Virtual Conference and Expo. I'm Joe Keenan, Managing Editor of Retail Online Integration. I'm pleased to welcome you to this session, David versus Goliath, How to Take on Amazon and Win. I'm joined by TJ Gentle, President and CEO of SmartFurniture.com, an online retailer of modern furniture for the home and office, who will discuss how small to mid-sized retailers can compete with the Amazons of the world by leveraging dynamic pricing, personalization techniques, depth of product lines, product expertise, big data, and other strategies. Since TJ became CEO, SmartFurniture.com has won numerous awards and industry recognition for its innovative technology applications, as well as experiencing a five-fold increase in sales. Before we get started, let me review some technical pointers. First, if you have any technical issues, troubleshoot by clicking on the widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the question and answer box. You can also use the question and answer box to submit your questions to today's panelist. We'll be addressing select questions later on, but you can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the features on this console. Check out the Tips for Attendees widget if you'd like to learn more about the console you're viewing on today. Finally, if you would like to view this session again later, don't forget that we'll be archiving the entire show today. We'll have the on-demand environment up and running for 3 months beginning on Monday, July 21st. Watch your email for more details. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome TJ Gentle to get us started.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to speak here and see if I can get this started. I guess to get this going, you know, David versus Goliath, how to compete against Amazon and when. You know, we first have to look at who is Amazon and what do we know about them. And a quote that I think is very appropriate for this is from Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon. He says, if we can keep our competition focused on us while we stay focused on our customers, ultimately we will turn out all right. And, you know, that is so true. So many of us are frequently looking at Amazon to see what innovations they're putting into place. We're also looking at Amazon to see, you know, what technologies are going to benefit customers and seeing what we can leverage. And at the end of the day, Amazon is focused on its customers and has just been had an incredible run of growth. If you look at Amazon's growth over the last 14 years or so, you'll notice that, you know, their year-over-year growth rate is about 31%. During that same period, that's Walmart's growth rate was about 8%. Right now, Amazon in 2013 generated about $74 billion in sales, which is incredible. They came off a tremendous growth rate from 2012 to 2013. But when you put it in perspective in terms of Internet retail sales, Amazon's currently representing about 28% of all retail Internet sales. So it's a pretty amazing run that they've had, and they are, you know, unequivocally, you know, in the lead when it comes to Internet retail. So how have they done this? And, you know, there are a million facets to their business model, but, you know, basically their strategy was put together, you know, by Jeff Bezos on the back of a napkin, and this is sort of a sketch that they've shared with the public. But basically here is their overall strategy. You know, start with a customer experience and provide a remarkable customer experience. And in turn, that'll bring people to their website. With more people coming to their website, that'll attract more sellers to be part of their platform. And with more sellers brings more selection. And this just keeps spinning the flywheel. Meanwhile, Amazon's going to focus on lowering its cost structure. And by lowering the cost structure, it adds more momentum to the flywheel by allowing them to have lower and lower prices. And, you know, ultimately, when you go through and you look at Amazon and you compare them to traditional retailers and even other internet retailers, one thing you'll note is that their margins tend to be pretty low. They keep their, their average margins are very typically under 25%. You see it every once in a while for a quarter or two jump up above. And, you know, normally that's with some innovation that they've come out with, like the Kindle or something else where they're able to generate maybe better margins. But in general, their margins are relatively low. And that makes the world very difficult for other internet retailers to compete. And when you take into account, you know, that they're representing more than 25% of internet retail sales, they have 500 million monthly visits, you know, an unbelievable product assortment. And, you know, I can't think of a single instance after spending some time thinking about it of a company that has better delivery times and availability. You know, what does that lead us to when we're looking at who Goliath is? And in my view, if there is a monopoly in internet retail right now, it is going to be Amazon if it's not already. I mean, they pretty much are dominating the field, and it is a very, very difficult proposition for us to compete with them. So where does that leave us? You know, how can we as internet retailers compete with a giant? It is a very good question, and, you know, the topic of our discussion. And, you know, the bottom line here is you don't compete with a giant. You innovate or you find alternatives. And I thought this quote was appropriate. This is a baseball card from an old timer named Wee Willie Keeler, who, if you know much about baseball, he sort of coined the phrase, hit it where they ain't. And when it comes to competing with Amazon, I think that that's appropriate. You know, you really have to hit it where they're not and find ways to find those little corners of the marketplace where they haven't penetrated just yet. By the way, this guy, by way of background, was one of the smallest players ever to play baseball, or pro baseball, and is 14th all-time on the list of all professional batting or all professional baseball players in batting average. And he most of his hits were bunts. He was able to finesse his way into becoming a productive player despite the lack of size. And I do think that is analogous to the situation that many of us face today. So what are the competitive strategies that make, you know, that allow us to hit it where they ain't, so to speak? Where can we find alternatives to competing head-to-head with Amazon? Well, one area is in products. You know, and these are going to be no surprise, but basically compete on products, service, or technology. And, you know, there are variations of those, but if you start with those three and say, well, what can you do in each of these facets? You know, first, products, and I'll share a little bit of what we've done at Smart Furniture here. And in the beginning, one of the things that we really tried to do at Smart Furniture was create sort of a moat, a competitive moat, so to speak, by creating custom furniture. And that obviously is something Amazon is not dabbling with. They're very much into mass production and selling in volume. So if you're able to somehow leverage a platform to create custom products, that's going to create some type of advantage. All right? You know, an alternative to fully custom products is to come up with private label products. And, you know, private label products give you the opportunity to research the market, find where there are opportunities in terms of pricing or features, and decide, you know, with your brand, where should a product fit? And then, you know, spec and source those products to fit the price point, style, and feature sets that you're looking for. And, you know, private labeling can be very expensive, but it's also very accretive to branding. So depending on where you are in your business's life cycle, private labeling has some real benefits. The last area I'm going to talk about is mass customization. And this term, you may hear more and more about it, but it's sort of when I say custom, it's smart furniture from the beginning. Our concept was founding on the idea of mass customization. And, you know, briefly, that concept is mass produce certain components and then take those components and allow customers to create custom solutions for them. The benefit of that is that you're inventorying components and the customer creates the end product. And so you have a, you know, and many times, you know, an extraordinary number of SKUs, and the solutions have the effect of being customized without actually, you know, having to do one-off production processes. So you're able to maintain some real margin. One of the other things that as smart furniture has grown, and one of the things that we have looked at over the years was we can't make everything that we want to sell. There are just too many categories. So we started looking for manufacturing partners that actually had lean production processes and basically would fit into that mass customization model. And one partner that we, one of our early partners was Herman Miller. And Herman Miller's in Michigan. And in Michigan, you know, their production and manufacturing and operation cultures up there. Herman Miller basically maintains no inventory, and they make most of their products to order. And by sort of requiring that their suppliers keep component parts, you know, in actually on their property in many cases, they're able to make completely made-to-order products very quickly. So when we started, when we created a platform that allowed customers to customize products, the Aeron chair is an example you see here, it was a product that fit very well for us. Now, the Aeron chair is a good example. When we started selling it, lots of people were already selling it, and Amazon, many people sold it through Amazon. What you would notice if you sort of mapped out the entire marketplace was there were usually 3 to 12 different SKUs that were represented, 3 to 12 variations of that product that most people sold. When we started selling the product, we actually set up our application so that customers with just a few decisions could actually come through and design one of over 5,000 different variations. So it was very, very, give the customer the feeling of being, got some feedback here, I'm sorry. Hopefully that would clear it up. Give the customer the feeling of getting a customized product, yet on our end, you know, we were focused on the technology and making the customization process very simple, and Herman Miller did what they did best. So that's a strategy that has worked for us, and, you know, there are now more and more products available on Amazon and other places, but the ability to actually customize and dynamically see the customized products, you know, is not something that Amazon has jumped into. So it's continued to be an area where we maintain some competitive advantage. All right. We also, you know, talked about service and how you can compete using service. And, you know, I think that Zappos really was a good sort of playbook for how competing on service could create a competitive advantage for retailers. And, you know, just like Amazon has in many cases, when they see that someone has really established themselves in an area where they don't have a competency, they buy them. So that's what happened with Zappos, and you know, that element of, you know, in the shoe industry and competing on service, you know, it's, I guess if you can't beat them, join them, and that's sort of what Amazon has done with Zappos. But there are things that all of us can do to maintain sort of a competitive edge, and the biggest for us is to let our customers know that we're not there really just to sell to them. We're there to help them solve their problems and to create a relationship with them that hopefully is, as time goes by, we're more than just, you know, an email and a website. We're actually people here who care about making sure they get the right solution. And as we've continued to grow, we've realized that by calibrating all of our policies and every decision we make, you know, according to what, you know, we call the golden rule of customer service, and that's basically, you know, treat every customer the way you want to be treated when you're a customer. It's very simple, but it actually, you know, it's expensive, and there are times when we eat a lot of costs where other companies wouldn't. But the benefit to us has been and is, you know, our lifetime customer value is very high, and relative to our peers, is also very high. And that all comes from us being humans and ensuring that we connect with our customers on a very human level. And the picture you see there is a few of our customer service folks. They, you know, we recruit a certain personality type, and they love their jobs, and they love solving problems, and, you know, people really are a core part of that service strategy. What I'm going to spend most of the time talking about, most of the remainder, is technology. And there are many different facets of technology that can lend a competitive advantage. Some of them are in automation, some in merchandising, but personalization is really has been for us that element that allows us to sort of connect with our customers in a way that we don't feel like they get with Amazon. So how can you leverage personalization to create a competitive advantage, particularly in light of a company like Amazon? To think about that, the first thing I would say is take a step back and think of your role as a retailer. All right. One of the things as a retailer that you know is you have to know a lot about your customers, who they are, their technical data in terms of demographics, you know, what their preferences are, what their budgets are, what their style preferences are. But there's so many little data points that we collect over time that when you start structuring that data and really looking at it across a large customer base, you begin to, you know, see patterns. So the first step is, you know, as a retailer, I think, is to really get to know your customer. The second step, and this is the one that frequently we forget, we're basically selling products to customers. If there is someone who should know more than anyone else what they're selling, it's us. And knowing lots of detail about your products, you know, having your sales and buyers and service folks and even marketing folks constantly learning about products, you know, using your products, knowing all the details about your products. When you take customer knowledge and product knowledge, you sort of bring those together. The goal ultimately is to create the best customer experience possible. And by doing that, that is sort of our role as retailers. And a quote that has always been very sort of important to us in thinking about how do we create that best experience is a quote here from Steve Jobs. It says, "Get closer than ever to your customer, so close that you tell them what they need before they realize they need it themselves." And in essence, when we say what's our goal for personalization, it really is to anticipate the needs of customers and to create such an intuitive experience through this technology that customers may not even be aware that there's a product that can help solve their problem or that they have a problem, but that we are already anticipating that and trying to make it convenient for them to purchase. So, you know, to go through sort of the details of how we do this from a technical standpoint, you know, there are three basic facets to the personalization process as we've designed it. And the first element is figuring out what customer data matters and the piles and piles of data that we all have and all of the tools at our disposal, figuring out what data really matters. And the second is what product information matters. And then the third element is how can we match product data and product attributes to customer information in a way that creates that intuitive experience. So when you think about customer data, you sort of, you know, break that into two categories that we do. One is intrinsic data, and the intrinsic data is sort of the technical information you have about browsers on your site. Then there's referral data, where they come from, what, you know, in some cases, what keyword or, you know, now I guess you would look at what landing page they come to. And then, you know, once they're on your site, what are they doing? What paths are they clicking that give you an indication of what their preferences are? Those are sort of intrinsic bits of data that we've used. There is also explicit data, and you know, we look at things like their order history when we're actually dealing with customers. You know, we send surveys out, but where we really started was a very sort of simple, direct approach, and the thought came from, you know, how can we get at the most relevant information? And someone said, well, why don't we just ask them? Well, that's where we started. And, you know, a couple of examples of quiz questions that we've asked, depending on the category and the product. You know, this is an office chair genius that we use to sell office chairs. You know, one of the most important questions is, how long is someone going to sit in it? And if they're going to be in there all day, you know, it's very important that they get something that has lots of back support. If they're only going to be in there 0 to 3 hours, you know, it's very minimally important. Most customers don't know that each chair, you know, has a sort of targeted use on a daily basis. And by knowing our products and then asking this with customers, we can begin to calibrate which products are appropriate for which customer. Along the same lines, you know, if someone's ever had any sort of chronic pain, there are certain chairs that are actually designed to help people with whatever that pain is. And, you know, oftentimes if you're on a website, it's very difficult to, you know, explicitly know that. So we use that. This is another example of sometimes you just have to ask. So all in all, you know, the customer data, there for us, there are, you know, several variable sets that we look at, you know, very important characteristics for most retailers would be things like, you know, what is the customer's preference on a value to feature ratio? Are they more value oriented, more feature oriented? Others may be, you know, in furniture, what is your style preference, or how much available space do you have? If you take the customer information, you create one data set. The other side of the equation is the product data. And real quickly, product data is, you know, here's objective information which we all use. But the real special sauce for us and the things that help us create that intuitive experience is the subjective information. And those are things where we have to have someone who knows a lot about the product's rank attributes. And the way that we get to those things are, you know, the process that we create subjective rankings, you know, we actually use our salespeople and our marketing people and our buyers, the people who actually know the most about products. And they go through and they rate them relative to other products in the same category. All right, so quickly, you know, a quick example, you know, these three different chairs. If a customer, you know, clicks on one of these three chairs, it actually tells us very different things about each customer. The first would be more traditional, the second would be more casual, and then the third would be more modern. And this is an example of how, you know, these product attributes, those are subjective rankings, but they actually tie back to specific customer questions that we ask in explicit profiles. All right, so, you know, when you're working with the product data, again, go back to your role and think about what attributes with product data actually will associate with the profile customer characteristics. You combine those subjective and objective data points to create sort of the special sauce. And, you know, make sure you're comparing products in the same category. You wouldn't want to compare laptops to desktops or task chairs to desks. You know, you want to, when you're thinking about pricing and style, you want to rank them relative to each other. All right, the last part of the equation is really the algorithms and mapping of one side to the other. And, you know, you obviously need a good team of developers, but defining the processes on, you know, what attributes are appropriate with what customer profile characteristics is sort of the first step. Once you make those assumptions and you begin to associate them, there's no way to get around substantially testing each step of the process. And in order to really take advantage of the technology as it is available today, you have to use machine learning, meaning when a customer is exposed to a product, say in a merchandising context, that you have recommended or that has come from your sort of personalization process, if there's an impression and the customer does not respond to it, that's a negative data point. If the customer clicks on that product, that's a positive data point. The customer adds that to cart, that's an additional data point. And then if the customer buys it, you know, that may be a plus five in terms of the total value of those products matched with that particular profile set. These are the types of things that human beings, you know, we just can't sit and log these things. You have to create a process where the products are constantly testing and running different scenarios and algorithms against each other. And it pays off in the long run. By way of example, at Smart Furniture, when we get someone to actually go through the style quiz and answer 10 questions, they become 20 times more likely to purchase a product than someone who doesn't. All right, so a few takeaway points as we're running out of time here. Let's see. I am not getting the last slide to come. I'll just sort of talk through them. A few takeaway points in the presentation. One, you know, look for opportunities to develop distinctive products. You know, if they're not custom, look for mass customization. Look for partners that can help you with that. And then also see if there are private label opportunities for you. In addition to that, you know, think about, you know, adding a human element to all of your policies, adding a human element to it reward your team for being more personal and make sure that your policies sort of support a great service culture. And finally, look for technologies that enable you to leverage your expertise. If you have folks that are experts in products, make sure that you can create products that are technology will allow you to sort of leverage those benefits and create a better customer experience overall. Okay. Well, I am. I hope you guys actually saw the last slide. If there are any questions, Joe, I think we've got a couple minutes.
Yeah, thanks, TJ. Got some couple minutes here for a few questions. I'll start with this one. You spoke about customer data a lot. what are some of the ways or channels that Smart Furniture goes about collecting that customer data?
Good question. There are, you know, the intrinsic data, you know, is sort of native to our platform. You know, we're when there's a session on the site, we're logging browser type, device, what operating system they're using, and so forth. Those all, you know, there's a big difference between someone using a PC with Internet Explorer 8 and someone using a tablet with the most recent operating system in Safari. You know, the pricing or the budgetary differences between those two are pretty vast. So that's one example of ways we collect data. We also tend to we leverage as many third party data sources as we can to maintain some sort of relevance. So anytime we have customer information, we sort of run that against other databases to validate the assumptions we've made about some of the intrinsic data. And there are a few others, but, you know, right now, you know, in terms of platforms, we use Google Analytics, we use Omniture, Adobe's Omniture, and a couple other sort of specific, depending on the part of data we're looking at.
Okay, maybe we can sneak one more in here. As far as product knowledge, that's a big part of Smart Furniture's business. Maybe an example for how a smaller retailer like Smart Furniture can use product knowledge as a competitive advantage, against a bigger company like an Amazon.
Sure, and I'll go back to the Aeron chair example. I mean, for Amazon, the Aeron chair is a product that has a certain sales rank. for us, it is a product that, you know, half of our team has sat in regularly. They know whether, you know, a certain feature set on that chair works with someone with a lower back problem, or if someone is overweight or small, whether different adjustments or different variations of the chair are more appropriate. By being able to take that expertise and put it into an algorithm that then recommends that product based on a couple of quick questions that we can allow someone to ask online, it really gives us an opportunity to put all of our institutional knowledge right at the fingertips of a customer. And I think that there are thousands of examples out there of things that other companies can do where they really know their products better than Amazon, and they can use that to create a better customer experience.
Okay, great. Well, we're just about out of time, so I want to take this opportunity on behalf of Retail Online Integration to thank everyone for attending this session. If you're interested in discussing anything that you heard during TJ's presentation, I encourage you to visit the Networking Lounge to chat live with other session attendees. Please also visit the info booth and fill out our show survey to let us know about your experience today. Lastly, remember, if you missed anything today, the entire virtual show will be archived. The on-demand environment will be available for 3 months starting this coming Monday. Thanks, and have a great day, everyone.